que pasó, tratalo bien. No sé lo que faltó. Am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
Broadcasting from
occupied
territory.
I am Jose G. Moreno from the Chicano Development Center and ASA Press Media Association. Also joining me in the studio today is Ernesto Todd Morales from the Chicano Development Center. In this segment of Radio Free Aslan, we will focus on the racist and anti-ethnic studies SB 21 law in the state of Arizona. This racist law will prevent any K-12 student from taking any type of ethnic studies course. Today in the studio, we have Martin Sean Arce, the director of the Tucson Unified School District Mexican American ASA Studies Program. In addition, we have Renee Martinez, a teacher in the Mexican American ASA Studies Program in the same district. On May 11, 2010, Arizona nativist governor Jane Brewer signed SB 281 into law. At the same time of the passing of this anti-ethnic studies law, the nativist government passed SB 1070, which targeted Mexican and Latinos by racial profiling them in the state of Arizona. This anti-ethnic studies law is supposed to go into effect on December 31st, 2010. However, in October 2010, teachers, students, professors, community members filed a counter lawsuit against this nativist law.
Buenas tardes. My name is Sean Arce. My official capacity, I am the director of Mexican American Raza Studies in Tucson Unified School District. But I'm here representing myself as a critical Raza educator, one of 11 that I'm fortunate to sit with my brothers and sisters in this fight for social justice, in this fight for our historical memory, in this fight for our cultural affirmation. And I am a plaintiff in a case that has been filed in federal district court in Tucson, Arizona, against the heinous law and the draconian law of HB 2281, the anti-ethnic studies bill.
My name is Renee Martinez from Tucson, Arizona. I am currently a teacher within the Mexican American Studies Department. I've been a teacher in this department for the last 5 years. I'm also one of the 11 plaintiffs to challenge House Bill 2281.
What is the Mexican American ASA Studies Program in the Tucson Unified School District? What led to the establishment of this program? How many students and teachers are in this program?
The Mexican American Studies Department in Tucson Unified School District is an academic unit that is based on three things: our curriculum, our pedagogy, and our parent-teacher-student interaction. And within the curriculum, we are about cultural and social relevancy. We're about the curriculum is steeped in the notion of social justice. Our pedagogy is steeped in critical thinking, the development of a critical consciousness of developing this what we call embodied intellectualism. And our parent-teacher-student interaction is based on having that respect, that necessary respect for Mexican-American Latino parents, which has been noticed to be absent within the Mexican-American educational experience. So we found that those three things have been have really led to the creation of an academic identity for our students, and a real strong cultural identity, and which has all led to academic achievement for our students. So that is what we're based on, and the purpose that we are why we exist is because of the horrible educational conditions of Mexican American Chicano students. Traditionally in our public schools, we have about 50 teachers within the school district that teach these courses, K-12. At our elementary level, we have curriculum integration across all disciplines. The middle school level, we have actually standalone Chicano studies courses, and at the high schools, we have Chicano literature, Chicano history, and government courses.
Just how it came established is one of the things is it started off as a two-person department. Sean was one of those people. It was a long grassroots struggle at the demand of the community. After a long, hard fought struggle, demonstrating in front of district headquarters, letters, the whole bit, finally gained departmental status and was board approved in 1998.
Why is ethnic studies and Chicano studies important in our communities?
As I stated earlier, the Mexican-American educational experience of public schools has been one of utter failure. It's been one of unresponsiveness on the part of educational institutions. So as a result, the community saw the necessity to be responsive to Chicano youth. And the importance in that is we saw that our students were not engaged in the educational process. Students saw themselves as not part of the school system, as their history, their culture, our language being denounced and seen as deficits. So the critical part of Chicano studies is that it allows for and it creates a classroom environment wherein students see themselves in the curriculum. Students become engaged in the educational process. Students, we co-construct a sense of agency within our students so they become more self-determined for themselves, for their families, and for our community. So that is the importance of Chicano studies because of the relevancy of our course of study, the various issues and the educational crisis that we are confronted with in public schools and in society in general. This program is one tool to improve and make our communities healthier, stronger, more participatory, and more self-determined.
It's also extremely important because it tells the rest of the story. The rest of the story, there's a whole nother world out there, a whole nother history out there that has historically been omitted. And students who do not see themselves or people who look like them or their parents in school, the perception is they're not important or they don't matter. They don't recognize or they perceive it as they bring nothing to society. They've contributed nothing to the society. So, you know, that's the perception that students have told us that's the feeling of seeing themselves in this curriculum, knowing, learning their history for the first time as juniors in high school is kind of really mind-boggling. They know other history. They know some mainstream history.
The dominant narrative has done nothing for us. Kids do not see themselves in the curriculum. We have a concept that we utilize in indigenous epistemology called Tezcatlipoca. And within that whole concept of Tezcatlipoca, students actually see themselves, gain a clearer understanding of themselves. Unfortunately, Chicano youth have been made to feel ashamed and to hate ourselves. We often internalize that oppression that is taught, that we see in the media, that we see in schools. So this is a liberatory educational model wherein students begin to actually see themselves in that mirror and they begin to love themselves, love their families, love their community because of our great history, of our great culture, and of our all the great contributions that we made to society.
Who is Tom Horn? How has Tom Horn targeted the Tucson Unified School District Mexican American Lhasa Studies program? Before you answer, Sean and Renee, we'd like to show a clip from a debate between Tom Horn and sociologist Eric Dyson that occurred on CNN on May 11th, 2010.
Tom, why shouldn't Black literature, Chicano literature, specific courses designed to introduce kids to other points of view be taught?
Well, the standards that we promulgate require that all social studies classes teach different cultures. We want all kids to be exposed to a lot of different cultures. But what I'm opposed is dividing kids up so they have Raza studies for the Chicano kids. Raza means the race in Spanish. African-American studies for the African-American kids. Asian studies for the Asian kids.
But what's
kids.
Wrong with that? If an African-American kid wants a class that you know, has a focus on African-American studies, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it is that it divides students up by race, and I believe that one of the principal ideas of the American public school system is we bring kids together and we teach them to treat each other as individuals. What matters about a person is what does he know, what can he do, what's his character or hers, not what race was he born into. And one of our important functions is to teach kids from different backgrounds to treat each other as individuals and not to infuse them with ethnic chauvinism about a particular race and teach them narrowly just about the background and culture of the race they happen to have been born into, but to teach them about all different cultures and different races and different traditions And not divide them up by race. That, I think that's really backwards.
Michael, you've taught a course like this at Georgetown. Mr. Horn is basically saying, look, these classes are teaching these kids that they've been oppressed and that it creates anger and hatred, he said.
Well, it's ironic to me, first of all, Mr. Horn doesn't see the contradiction in terms because he has targeted this law toward Chicana studies. So he's targeted a specific racial subgroup, an ethnic group within the large panoply of American identities for this program. Number two, what's interesting is that ethnic studies are rife in American history, but the ethnicities happen to be Polish, Irish, Italian. They happen to be white European, Western, and Eastern European identities that are the basis of ethnic identity and what constitutes American history. If there was an integration of Chicana studies, of African-American studies, of Latina studies, of gay and lesbian studies into the broader curriculum, there would be no need to have these subgroupings and the subcultural attention paid to these particular formations. Thirdly, I teach classes all the time at Georgetown and before that at Penn and at DePaul University, and most of my students happen to be students of color. So they happen to be African-American, but they also happen to be Latina, Asian-Americans, and white Americans. I think that white Americans benefit from Chicana studies. I think that white Americans benefit from Latina studies. I think that white Americans benefit from African American studies. And finally, if we're talking about American history and shying away from the history of oppression, we're not talking about American history. I live in Washington, D.C. Right next door, the governor of Virginia failed to mention that slavery was a critical part of the Civil War. This is why we need these area studies to remind us the true history of America. And I think that Mr. Horn would agree that when we tell the truth about American history, the blood, the glory, the hardships, and all of that needs to be told along with the great celebration of American democracy.
Tom, you said that Chicano studies is teaching kids they've been oppressed and it makes them angry and unruly. Hasn't there been a history of oppression, though, of ethnic groups in this country, and shouldn't kids learn that?
Well, let me say that I didn't say that. I was quoting a former teacher who said that. We have testimony from a number of teachers and former teachers about the radical separatist agenda that the Raza Studies program has.
You did say that actually in your arguments that you published as an open letter to the people of Tucson.
Yes, I was quoting a teacher, so it wasn't from. I wasn't just asserting it. We had quotations from a witness
Why do you believe that? I mean, shouldn't if there has been a history of oppression, which most people would say there has, why shouldn't that be taught?
The textbook they use called The Pedagogy of the Oppressed by Paulo Freire, who's a well-known Brazilian communist. I've read the book. The sources are Marx, Engels, Lenin, Che Guevara, the philosophers who influenced them. And these kids' parents and grandparents came to this country, most of them legally, because this is the land of opportunity. And they trust their children to our schools. And we should be teaching these kids that this is the land of opportunity. And if they work hard, they can achieve their dreams and not teach them that they're oppressed. In fact, one of the girls from the, they sent up some of the kids.
So is there no racism today? I mean, is that something that should not be discussed?
That's not the predominant atmosphere of America. America is a land of opportunity, and we should be teaching the kids that this is a land of opportunity and not teach them the downer, that they're oppressed and they can't get anywhere. They should be angry against their government. They should be angry against the country. That's what the teachers are saying. Their observation is that has been going on in this Raza Studies program. In fact, I brought in a picture that you might want to show that shows the revolutionary garb that they wore when they protested against by law with the masks, sunglasses, berets, brown shirts. This is a revolutionary program, which is an absolute abuse of taxpayer money to do that in the public schools. And they sent up a bunch of students to testify at the legislature, and a girl was testifying. A state senator said, couldn't you learn these things in other courses? And she said, no, before I took this course, I didn't realize I was oppressed. Now that I took the course, I realize that I'm oppressed.
Michael, what about that?
Well, this is ludicrous. Paulo Freire, the correct pronunciation of the Brazilian philosopher, talked about pedagogy of the oppressed, learning of people who have been oppressed. You could talk about Michel Foucault, who's a Frenchman. You could talk about Jacques Derrida. There are many people who talk about oppression and the release from oppression and how we gain relief from it. In fact, Anderson, the history of America is to seek relief from the oppression of the British so we could establish this country. So we're teaching relief from oppression when we talk about the relief from the British. But more specifically, This is ludicrous to assume that the entire history and culture of a people can be reduced to responses to white supremacy, social injustice, and inequality. The reality is we have fought those battles, but we have made America better. When Martin Luther King Jr. marched, that should be taught not simply to African-American people, but to Americans, because he fought against the principles and practices of prejudice so that the ideals of democracy could become real. Cesar Chavez, when he fought for the workers' rights there in California, that story needs to be told so that Americans can understand that there were histories of people who oppressed
these
people.
But Michael, when people see that picture of, you know, kids dressed up in you know, khaki garb, that's going to concern some people.
I understand that. I don't mind people being critical of certain aspects, but that's just like saying the Tea Party movement that is out now that has racist and vitriolic portrayals of President Obama should be wiped out altogether. And I'm sure that many people say, no, there are legitimate points to be made, but those racist elements must be dealt with. I don't think that I understand why that would be problematic, but radical separatism has been practiced by American government practices in terms of legal segregation. So, the most radically separatist organization in this country has been the American government. So now we want to not deny the legitimacy of telling people the truth. We want to say, bring the truth in the open so we can understand the greatness of this country. But we can't do so by pretending that the ugliness did not exist.
So, Tom, what about that? Are you throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Or why not just try to, you know, change the curriculum?
You know what? I was on that march on Washington in summer of 1963. I just graduated from high school, where Martin Luther King gave his famous speech saying, we should be judged by the quality of our character and not the color of our skin. And that has been my most fundamental belief my entire life, that we are individuals. We are not exemplars of the race we were born into. And this philosophy that's preached by this program in Tucson and by your other guest, that's a race-obsessed philosophy, and it's a downer philosophy. Teach people that they're oppressed,
look,
make them angry,
you know what?
Make it so that they don't have hope for their future.
Let me jump in too. I'm saying that it's not about, you keep saying downer. Look, it's a downer that people are oppressed. It's a downer that people are depressed. It's a downer that people suffer injustice.
That's not but what you should be teaching.
But the thing is, if we don't deal with the downers, we can't deal with what's up. We got to deal with, how many stories have we told about Benjamin Franklin? How many stories have we told about Aaron Burr? How many stories have we told about the founding fathers and brothers? And then let's tell the truth about Thomas Jefferson, a great American. He wrote the Declaration of Independence, but he also one of the authors, but he was also a slaveholder. Let's tell the truth about the downer to Sally Hemings, and then we can tell the full truth about Thomas Jefferson and the full arc of democracy. This kind of ostrich approach where we deny the legitimacy of people, first we oppress them, then we get mad if they say they were oppressed, and then when they say they're part of American history, we deny them. This is a central part of American history that we need to
teach. Let's teach American history to all of the kids, and we can show both sides of issues when we teach history to all the kids, but don't divide them by race and teach the black kids black history, the Chicano kids Chicano history, the Asian kids Asian history. They should all be exposed to all the history.
Absolutely.
And it's a race-obsessed philosophy that should be kept out of our schools, that kids should be put in courses where they only learn about the history of the race they happen to have been born into.
If you have been demoralized and degraded and your history has not been taught, why should we have to have a special class for Chicano studies? Why doesn't the larger curriculum deal with the profound and sophisticated contributions of Chicano people to American society? Once that happens, then when we integrate the full arc of the contributions of demoralized and degraded people into the curriculum, then we won't need that curriculum until that time.
I got to jump in here. Tom, let me ask you, a lot of your critics say, look, this is about politics. You want to run for attorney general. You're running for attorney general. Your term is up as superintendent. Is that true? You're running for attorney general?
Yes, I am running for attorney general. I've served 8 years as superintendent of schools, and that's all that's allowed.
So to your critics who say this is about politics, you're basically trying to appeal to potential voters out there.
I've been fighting for this law for 4 years, and this is among my most deeply held beliefs. I mentioned to you being on the march on Washington where Martin Luther King gave his speech. I believe very deeply that people are individuals. They are not exemplars of the race they were born into. And this race-obsessed philosophy that your other guest is expounding,
sir,
and it's going on in Tucson is wrong
race-obsessed. First of all, you repeated that same statement earlier, so it's a great line. But the reality is Martin Luther King Jr. said the whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundation of this nation until the Negro, and we can add others, are granted his full citizenship rights. He talked about the bitter legacy of white supremacy before he began to talk about that dream. And then he said that in America, it's an ideal toward which we should strive. But in the meantime, we should adjust to the reality that we have some negative realities that we should adjust to and that we should address. And I think that Martin Luther King Jr. cannot be used to justify xenophobic and racist passions that are dressed up as desires to reform the curriculum.
Well, I would say the xenophobia and the racism is on your side.
Martin Luther King. I don't want to keep anybody out. I don't want to keep anybody out. I want to include all people. I don't want Arizona has been deeply profoundly racist and xenophobic.
No, you want to divide kids by race. You want to divide kids by race.
No, I want white kids to learn about Chicano people. I want white kids to learn about African American people.
Martin Luther King inspired us all by saying that we should be judged by the content of our character and not the color of our skin.
The night before he died, Martin Luther King Jr. said, America, all I ask you is to be true to what you said on paper.
One at a time, because both at a time, no one's going to listen. Michael, finish up.
American people and others, now you must raise them up. Martin Luther King Jr. cannot be taken out of context, and you can't use one speech as if you froze him in 1963 without seeing what he said in 1968, where he was bitterly opposed to the practices of most of what America was doing in the name of freedom and democracy. That's the tradition, I think, that the people in who support Chicano studies in Arizona are carrying forward.
Tom, I want you to be able to show on, then we got to go.
Okay, it is not out of context to say that he's inspired us all with the idea that we are to be judged as individuals. What can we do? What is our character? Not what race do we happen to have been born into. Don't divide kids by race. Don't propagandize kids that they're oppressed and that they have no future and they should be angry at this country.
But anyone
teach
can
them that this
Tom,
is the land of opportunity.
Classes, right?
Teach them that this is the land of opportunity where if they work hard, they can achieve their dreams, and teach them American history.
Tom, anyone, just for accuracy's sake, anyone can take these classes.
Anyone can take the classes, okay. But they're designed primarily for the race.
Tom
the African American, the
gotta
Chicano,
Tom Horn,
the
Michael
Asian,
Eric Dyson.
Or the Indian.
Guys, I appreciate your time. Good discussion.
Returning to our discussion on who is Tom Horn.
Tom Horn, for the past 8 years, has been the superintendent of public instruction. Again, he has utilized Mexicans as his platform, starting off with the anti-bilingual movement. He was successful in utilizing that to get elected his first term. His second term was when he began to criticize multicultural education, specifically critical multicultural education. As a result of wanting to gain entrance into higher positions, specifically the attorney general, he has constantly and relentlessly utilized Raza Studies as a political platform to gain that office. In 2006, when the first round of this decade's anti-immigrant, anti-Latino legislation at the national level came about, the great farm labor organizer and co-founder of the United Farm Workers, Dolores Huerta, came to Raza Studies at Tucson High School and spoke to the students, really spoke some truths about the state of our nation and how Mexicanos were being exploited, all sectors of society, and stated that Republicans hate Latinos. And people were like, oh my gosh, this lady's crazy. But her words were prophetic. In the state of Arizona, you see this wave of anti-Mexican legislation. And he has really exploited that whole talk that Dolores Huerta gave and has made it his own personal mission to eliminate us. Seeing that our program was effective, we demonstrated it year after year and showed him the data, the very data that came from the Department of Education, his own data. He twisted it on us. He said it's not about effective educational models. It's about values. And he said it's about American values. And we were, in fact, he charged that, and he claimed that we were anti-American. Our curriculum, the way we teach, the way we interact with our students was very anti-American. So he has really utilized us as a platform, has constantly demonized and dehumanized us. And unfortunately, he's been successful. He gained his next position. He will be the attorney general in the state of Arizona. So that's a little bit about Tom Horn.
I'd just like to add, this is a person who previously he was a school board member in a very affluent area in Maricopa County, Paradise Valley. And while there, he prides himself on eradicating or eliminating women's studies. So anything, you know, counter-hegemonic, he takes a lot of pride in that. Also, when the whole Dolores Huerta incident occurred, he admitted he had never heard of her before. And then when he did hear a little bit about her on publicly on television and stuff, he would refer to her, Cesar Chavez's his former girlfriend. So it's just kind of another reason why ethnic studies is important. You know, it's history that's omitted, that's not told, and a lot of ignorance is spread because of that.
Since the 1990s, the state of Arizona has become a major center for nativist and racist immigration policies that have targeted Mexican and Latinos in that state. As a result, Arizona has become the Alabama of the Southwest. What is your perspective on this matter? why is there anti-Mexican Latino backlash in your state? A great example of how Arizona is becoming the Alabama of the Southwest is Joe Pyle's crusade against the Mexican Latino population in that state. Here's a clip from the new documentary, Under Pyle, from PanLeft.
I want my jails to be, quote, bad jails. He actually said that.
The human rights violations are on the increase.
Every part of this police agency retooled into an anti-illegal immigration enforcement.
I'm going to continue to do everything I've been doing. Nothing changed.
Sheriff Gerald Pyle turning up the heat on illegal immigrants.
Roundups of our people intimidating the community.
We're following an unmarked car. Pulled somebody over close to a church.
Inmates beaten to death. The more punishment that you can put onto an inmate, the better off you will be in the department chain of command.
We will arrest them. They are illegal.
We knew there had to be consequences. The arrest rate was dropping. Sex assaults were not investigated.
The work here is one as part of a national movement, a national outcry for justice.
It's just absolutely out of control.
Department of Justice, we've asked to speak with them. We've turned in ample amount of evidence.
There's blood on the hands of the Justice Department every day that they don't stop Sheriff Joe.
Arpaio is a rogue sheriff, and they're not doing anything.
Returning to our discussion on how Arizona has become the Alabama of the Southwest.
Arizona, much like other states, is experiencing a demographic shift where Latinos are becoming the majority population, particularly in our public schools. With that shift, there's a fear. There's a fear by dominant society that they're going to lose their political power, their economic power, their power within educational institutions. So that combined with the economic recession that we're in, much like history has shown us before, they pick on the most marginalized. They utilize Mexicans as their political platform, as their scapegoat to gain political office, to maintain that hegemonic state that we are in, and it's really a threat. Speaking to that, when this bill initially came out against ethnic studies, it came out under the Homeland Security Bill. And we used to joke, if it wasn't so serious, it would be hilarious. But the effect of education of Chicano youth is they deem it as a threat to Homeland Security. And there's some reality to that, because there would be a shift in power. If our course of study, our program were to be totally implemented fully statewide, you would see not only this demographic shift, but accompanied with that, you would see a shift in power. You would see a shift in economic power, political power. And that's why we're seeing this backlash, a combination of those in power maintaining that power, maintaining a state where you see Chicano Latinos going to the prisons more than they do higher education. And unfortunately, that is making many people rich because of the private prison industry that we see. So this very program that we're involved with, and we have the fortunate opportunity to work and struggle for, is really a counter-hegemonic endeavor that we're undertaking.
I think Sean hit on it pretty well. You know, just a threat to the status quo. Many people perceive power comes in numbers, and with the, again, with the demographic shift, and much like he spoke with the current economy, the state of our current economy, know, historically, it's been that revolving door. You know, we're welcome and when convenient. Right now, we're perceived as inconvenient, economically specifically. So whether it be the Great Depression of the 1930s and repatriation, or it be right now in this economic depression, we are perceived as an inconvenience. So it, like, as much as Sean mentioned, it's, we believe it's multiple reasons why we're like Alabama.
Why is Tom Horn using Adolfo Cunha's Occupy America and Paulo Freire's work as a basis of his nativist and racist argument? However, before you answer, we're going to show a clip from Presses of Knowledge, which is upcoming PBS documentary on your program.
My history teacher, she wouldn't really pay attention to us, and we were like the Mexicans sitting in the back, just sitting there because we had to be there.
Like, I had a teacher in freshman year that would tell me, like, oh, you're not gonna go to college, you're not gonna do this and this and that, because of the way I dressed and the way I made my makeup and all that.
I'm not gonna lie, I've hated education.
Everybody knew that the school system was discriminatory, that we weren't putting kids in college. The staffing wasn't reflective of the community. It was only a question of time before we started doing what we wanted to do. And the first big issue was to say, we're here, and this is our statement. We're going to push the envelope a little further.
Good morning. You looking for M215?
Yes, sir.
That's my class. I'm Ms. Kirkos. What's your name?
Let's go.
In Lakesh.
Ethnic studies is being conscious and aware of what's going on in your own neighborhood as well as the world.
You are in a world called magical realism. Why did it make sense that Latin America was the place where this happened?
Just what they started teaching us was so interesting. I just could not stop thinking about it. I would go home with articles and I would just read them over and over again.
Some people are claiming because of Obama being the president now, that we have reached what Martin Luther King died for, and that's the idea that people be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Have we reached that?
No.
Have we?
This class is based on critical thinking, and in that does come, you know, empowerment.
At the end of the day, you just feel like so much stronger when you learn something. Like, I'm not just talking about math, like if you learned a problem, you're like, oh yeah, I learned that. But if you're learning an actual moral or something that you'll use every day, then you just feel so much stronger, like a warrior.
State School Superintendent Tom Horn wants to end ethnic studies programs in the Tucson Unified School District. He's taking his push to state lawmakers next week, a bill that would ban schools from grouping or teaching students based on their ethnic backgrounds.
They're dividing them up by what? Their race. I have asked the legislature to pass a bill to prohibit ethnic studies programs, and that's the Senate bill that we're talking about.
Whoever has been elected to talk about this program, please come forward.
We go for these classes because people that have graduated and gone to these classes have said nothing but positive things. They figured out who they really are as human beings. They figured out how to handle situations to their best abilities.
Mr. Chairman, is teaching of hate speech, sedition, anti-American. If people want to pay for that on their own dime in their homes, they can be as anti-American as they want.
It doesn't teach us to be anti-American. It teaches us to embrace America, all of its flaws and all. We invite you to come and see our classes unannounced, just so you get a real sense of what we're talking about.
Members, by your vote of 4 ayes, 3 nays, 0 not voting, you have given a due pass recommendation.
Have to remember is that our culture is what is very powerful. It drives us. It's here even when we're gone.
We'll always be united. No matter how far this bill goes, we're here together in the lucha.
This is hate speech. This is anti-American, seditious, revolutionary right. Talk okay. In a high school.
When they try to take these classes away, it's something impossible.
We believe it's a matter of life and death.
When you have students demonstrating wearing brown shirts, bandanas, this is serious.
For someone that's felt so out of place for the majority of their life, it feels good to have a home.
If you want a different culture, then fine, go back to that culture. But this is America.
You get away from my border!
To the public building?
You hear a lot of talk about La Conquista de Mexico. Guess what? It never happened, right? This is proof of that.
These programs are aimed at creating dissension.
You're beautiful young people. You're smart. You have critical consciousness. You will pick your path for yourself.
I think your struggle as a human being, to be a good human being, has begun, and I will always hold you to that.
Returning to our discussion about Tom Horn's argument against Adolfo Cunha and Paulo Freire's scholarship.
First of all, Occupied America, the title itself is seen as by Tom Horn as something that he can't exploit. He wants to negate any issues of race, any issues of class, any issues of gender, and he sees our current society as a post-racial society, as a post-classist society, and so these books are very convenient for him. Just the title itself, again, to build upon the fears, to build upon the ignorance of the public. Furthermore, he has really decontextualized some of the citations in the quotes of both books. For instance, with Occupied America, totally taking things out of context and wrongfully and mistruthfully stating that Rodolfo Acuña is promoting racism. In the instance of Pedagogy of the Oppressed, saying it's steeped in Marxism, that's an easy way for him to demonize it. When in fact, both those books are about a counter-narrative, a more truthful historical inclusion for Pedagogy of the Oppressed. It's really about rehumanization. It's really about not replicating current paradigms that we operate under. We're not about any type of espousing any type of replication of a paradigm we're in. Chicanos or Latinos are oppressed in any group. We're really about rehumanizing and building understanding in those who actually do oppress us. So he totally took both of those books out of context. And I know he's really ignorant on the books, but just the mere fact that we have class sets of those books, we utilize both of those books extensively in high school. Those books are read at undergrad level and in many instances graduate level work. So for those who deem Chicano students as deficient, as not academically prepared, yet our students are walking around with those books and with pride and saying, you know, I've read a book. Some students haven't even read a book in their entire lives, yet they're reading Occupied America, they're reading Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and they're critically analyzing those books. And they're developing, as a result of that, they're developing a real critical consciousness about themselves, their world, and their situation.
Well, yeah, just the building off of what Sean has said and the ignorance of some of the things that Tom Horn has said. He thinks Occupied America is about taking the seven states back and returning them to Mexico. That's how he interprets the title of the book. And when he's critiqued Pedagogy of the Oppressed, obviously not having read it, he called it Pedagogy of the Oppression. So just that changing that tense really changed the whole dynamic of the book. The way he called it, Pedagogy of the Oppression, would implicate that we are teaching oppression rather than how, you know, it just totally changes the dynamics of Pedagogy of the Oppressed rather than teaching how oppressed people can cope with their situations. And as Sean said, it's actually talking about the oppressed, liberating the oppressors, how that can be done. But just those kind of things of he's really, for lack of a better term, stuck his neck out and critiqued these books, but on very ignorant ways.
Why did teachers and supporters of the Tucson Unified School District Mexican American and Latino Studies program made the critical decision to file a civil lawsuit against Tom Horn and SB 2281? However, before your answer, we're going to show a clip from your October 18th, 2010 civil lawsuit press conference.
Everybody, thank you all who came out today in support of the Save Ethnic Studies effort. My name is Sean Arce, and I'm a critical RASA educator. And today I'm coming to you as a plaintiff against 2281. The history of RASA studies in Tucson Unified School District actually expands over 40 years. It was a grassroots struggle in which the Tucson community made an effort to make the public schools more responsive to the needs of the Mexican-American Chicano community. From the walkouts in 1969 to the realization of Mexican-American studies in 1998, we can be proud of our community because we have developed and maintained an effective educational program that has produced strong leadership and that has made our community stronger, healthier, and more participatory. I'm serving as a plaintiff against HB 2281 for very important reasons. I'm defending the teaching of Mexican-American Chicano history, culture, and contributions so that my own two children, Maya and Emiliano, can continue to know the importance of knowing where they came from and where they're going. My parents and those of their generation within the Mexican-American community were made to feel ashamed of their roots, of their raíces. Secondly, for all of the children in TUSD, the importance of knowing Mexican-American and Chicano history, culture, and contributions. That is very important for a fully participatory society. And as we enter, or as we are in the 21st century, it is important to know each other, to build those cultural bridges of understanding. And most importantly, Mexican-American RASA Studies is a proven educational model wherein we have successfully sustained and maintained an engaging, relevant, rigorous course of study that has produced students who have actually closed the achievement gap, who have, in some instances, we have outperformed our peers and are on standardized tests. We also have produced students who gain entrance into colleges and universities at higher rates than their peers, and than Mexican Americans as a whole, nationally. We have also produced students who have a love for themselves and for their community. Thank you.
Returning to our discussion on the civil lawsuit against Tom Horn and SB 2281.
So the main reason is we have exhausted all other efforts. We have tirelessly lobbied the legislature. We have tirelessly reached out to Tom Horn and invited him into our classrooms, tirelessly reached out to other lawmakers and public officials. To no avail. Our community, including ourselves, have demonstrated. We have written letters. We have written academic pieces. We have contributed academic literature to the efficacy of our program. Yet that means nothing to these legislators and these lawmakers. And as a result of exhausting ourselves and all those ways, we saw no other. We saw no other way in which to preserve what we're doing. And we decided to file in a federal district court because we see the importance of this issue. We well understand that this effort's going to be exhausting. It's going to be taxing on ourselves, on our families, on our community. But we know that... how important it is, how critical are the teaching of our history, our culture. We don't want to roll back to those days in which that was not acknowledged in our schools. Another thing is we're real hopeful. We are optimistic despite the barrage of attacks that we experience daily. Despite the death threats that we all experience, despite the ugly looks from some of our colleagues because of their ignorance and their misunderstanding of what we do, we decided to take that route. And we know, being students of Chicano history, while we are teachers, we're really students, and we are constantly learning. We learn from our students. We know that justice always prevails. And the only way that it prevails is if we struggle. And if we struggle in every which way. We struggle, whether it be in the streets, if we struggle in academic ways to get that knowledge out to the public, or if we struggle through the courts, it's going to be a necessary struggle in order to preserve this program. And that is just one route which we're taking in order to save Chicano studies in public schools.
Okay. Renee?
Building off of what Sean has said, this is we believe this is probably our last stand. This is our last option, our last stand. This is to give us our best chance to fight this through litigation in federal court. As a parent, as a member of the community of Tucson, as an educator, knowing that this is a successful model, that this truly is closing the opportunity gap, more commonly known as the achievement gap, we feel this is a responsibility. The 11 plaintiffs, there was no hesitation, there was no option. We looked at this as, it's not an option if we're going to be a plaintiff or not. This is a responsibility. And as Sean terms it many times, and it's real, that for a lot of our students, for many of it, this study is a matter of life and death.
Now, Jose's gone through a number of things talking about the background and the history of this. What I really want to talk to you guys, though, about is how you're organizing this, how you're putting it together. All right, so you have right now a struggle that I would say is of national scope. And I guess what I would like you to tell me or kind of walk me through right now is the stages that you've gone through up until this point. In terms of organizing and where you're at right now?
I had to start off from the grassroots. I had to start off from the local level. From there, like I stated before, we've exhausted all efforts in the local level. We decided to file in federal court to battle this. Beyond that, we have a national network. Ourselves, we identify ourselves as a collective of critical raza educators. And with that, we meet folks like yourselves at these national conferences, being a machistas ourselves. We know folks from way back in the day, and that's something really really beautiful, that network that we have of solidarity, not only amongst our Chicano brothers and sisters, but as well as our white allies, our African-American allies. And we put a call out to all major universities, and we've been solidifying dates at major universities across the nation. And with that, we've been fortunate to go to the universities, but equally important, we've been able to go to community spaces in places such as Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, here in Lansing. We've been fortunate to be able to have a real comprehensive outreach model that we've been able to put in place. It's been a very humbling experience for us in that people have welcomed us with open arms and have been very generous in order to been very generous in seeing the importance of supporting this defense fund. So that's kind of the template that we're working off of. We're fortunate to have a actual director of Save Ethnic mm-hmm. Studies, and she has been she's been relentless. She's talking to unions. She's talking to women's groups. She's talking to...
What's her name?
Her name is Deyanira Nevarez. She's very seasoned in fundraising, politically like-minded, and very, very strongly believes in social justice, but has a tremendous skill set of outreach and has a national network herself because of her political work. So she's been able to arrange this fundraising tour date, and that has really helped. That accompanied with some of the national exposure that we've had, some of the major networks such as MSNBC, CNN, we've really garnered national attention. We really think the nation is watching us.
Okay, so I guess what I'd kind of like for both of you to talk about a little bit is what is it that you hope to accomplish through all this organizing? I mean, there's a tremendous amount of effort that's going into this? I mean, is it just to save Raza Studies in Tucson, Arizona?
No, not just to save Raza Studies in Tucson, Arizona, but to build a one of the main objectives is to build this network, because we know this is one of many attacks that's taking place on progressive groups, one of many attacks that is taking place on Mexicanos, Latinos in this country. It's also one of many attacks on our humanity. The globalization in our society that we live in has really, we've seen an increase in exploitation. So these issues are one and the same. We need to begin to solidify these networks. We need to begin to really start to work collectively, entire communities, all communities, to fight these injustices. So that's one of the main things in our tour. Obviously, the lawsuit is going to cost a lot of money, a lot of resources, and we need to convince people. We need to convince not only minds but hearts on the importance of Chicano studies in our schools. And while that has been very gratifying, at the same time, it's been tiring because, you know, we both are, this is just two of us. All of our folks have gone on this tour. It takes away time from our work. We have full-time jobs. We have obligations to maintain and continue to be successful in what we do and providing that critical education for our youth. But also it's been taxing on our families. We're often away from our families. We both have children. Many of the maestros in our group have children, and that's tough. But at the same time, you know, we hope we're acting as examples of what it is to fight for social justice. It is sacrifice. It is sacrifice of your own familia. So that's been tough. But hopefully, you know, my daughter, my son, will see after they forgive me for being gone so long that you know, my daddy was fighting for social justice, and he was doing this on a national scale, and he was going out and aggressively seeking these relationships and these networks of solidarity.
Renee, you're a fairly new teacher to the Tucson program. How long have you been there?
5 years. This is my fifth year.
You've been there 5 years, and you grew up in the Tucson area.
I did,
Okay. I mean, my question to you as somebody who's grown up there and who has gone to college and has come back now to be a teacher, I mean, you work in a program that services 1,500 kids, that's right?
About 3,000 K-12, 1,500 at the high school level.
Okay, so 3,000 kids altogether. You have a 0% dropout rate in your high school program. 80% of your kids go to college. Mm-hmm. Okay, my question is this, is that in terms of like how this is looked at in the overall structure, how does that change? How do those types of statistics change our community's ability to organize for social justice?
Right. I think it directly affects it. You know, given the crisis in education, it's not new. You know, Chicanos, Latinos have not done well in school. So given the fact that we've been able to close this achievement gap at a very, very high rate, this is a model that, you know, it should be replicated, I believe, just to close that gap, to truly address this crisis. Historically, we've been trying to, from a very naive approach, trying to fix the kids, if you will. Something's wrong with them. Something's wrong with their culture. Something's wrong with their families. They don't value education, right? So to counter that deficit model and come from a more of a critical consciousness and have policy change and change some structures and change how these kids are schooled, it's been effective. So having an educated community, we talk about very much of that organic intellectualism and gaining that knowledge and taking that knowledge back to the community. You have a responsibility to take that knowledge back to your community and share it with your community. Whatever you learn, you know, somebody taught you. So it's your responsibility to pass that knowledge on. And just that alone can directly impact the community.
Mm-hmm. Sean, how about you? I mean, from your position as director of this program, how does your success fundamentally alter our ability to deal with what you were talking, these hegemonic ideas or powers that are kind of crushing down on us as a community?
Strictly in the realm of education, we've been able to mobilize. Rene is an example himself, who has gone through the K-12 public school system, who has made full circle from his community through the educational system. and come back around, and it's coming back around to transform that system, to transform the policies, the practices, and the procedures of public schools. And he's actually changing the structures of schools to make it by and for Chicanos, because we are the majority population in our schools. And without us, without our existence, the school district doesn't exist. So that's been one way. People have gone through the system and have come back full circle and are now teaching these Raza Studies classes. That's in the educational realm. But there's many other realms. There's a political realm. There's cultural practitioners in the community that are really affirming the importance of our culture. There are people in the realm of the legal realm. There are people in community organizing, people in the immigration movement, the human civil rights movement. So it's not just one area. It's many areas. And we really see the education realm as a critical piece, because that's where we have a captive audience. That's where we have the time to sit with these Chicanos and Chicanas from our community and we need to take advantage of that, because like Renee said, it is a matter of life and death. The common trajectory that we take, more so than going to higher education, is the prison route, especially for our male Chicano youth. So we got to take advantage every single time we're in that classroom. We have to be on point. We have to be sure that this is our last day that we're ever going to teach. This is our last day to help ourselves. We're not doing it in a condescending way where we're looking down on our community. We see these children as our sons and daughters. We don't see them as students walking in our classroom. We see them as, you know, they're our prized possession. This is who we are as a people. So we really take advantage of those opportunities that we have every minute with these students, organizing, educating, equally important, learning from our students. As educators, as effective critical race educator, we learn from our students as much as we have the opportunity to share with them. So this type of program, because of the efficacy, we've really built community. The veteranos in our community love what we do. They're seeing beautiful kids come through the system and coming out and working for the community, seeing themselves as having an obligation for our community. So we've created an ecology in Tucson when the conditions are ripe for activism. The conditions are ideal to organize. The conditions are ideal to resist this hegemony that we're living in.
Yeah, I want to thank both of you guys for being here these last couple of days. This has been very instructional. So, and thanks for answering my questions. I appreciate
thank you, brother.
Appreciate
thank you.
Your time.
What can people do that live outside Arizona to help in the legal struggle to save Ethnic Studies and Chicano Studies in the U.S. Empire?
We could raise consciousness. That's the first step. Right now, as educators, we know about money. We know we don't have any money. But what little folks could give, if you give a dollar, if you give $5, you could go on to www.saveethnicstudies.org. You know, sacrifice yourselves. Sacrifice a little of yourselves. Give a little of yourselves to contribute to a great cause, because we are transforming. We're a transformational educational model that I believe has not only saved the lives of our students, but it really has saved our lives. We know who we are. We're proud of who we are, and we will continue to fight regardless of the outcome. We will continue to fight for the educational rights, the cultural, the historical affirmation that we deserve as a community. So we really ask that those that can be generous, because the implications are going to be on all of us. This isn't only an attack on Raza Studies, but this is an attack on humanity. They're going to come after higher education. They're going to come after any marginalized group. So we need to really learn from those models in Chicano history and see what resistance has provided for us. I'm very privileged in that I'm sitting here. I'm an educator. And I'm in the position to fight for my community. And so I really see that as an obligation, but also as a privilege. We ask that those spread the word. If you don't have money, understood, it's hard economic times, but if you know people who have money, if you know people who can contribute to La Causa, that'd be great, and we greatly appreciate it.
Beyond fundraising efforts, just to as Sean mentioned, spread the word and know the facts, seek the root of the truth, because the opposition has done a real good job of spreading mistruths. unfortunately, a lot of people within our own community, within our state, have really tied on to these mistruths and believe what the opposition accuses us of doing, which is absolutely false. But so just get out the accurate word.
Okay, first I'd like to shout out to all my colegas, Raza Studies educators, all our conscious teachers, and most importantly, our students, because that's what we're here for. We're fighting for the future of our youth. And I'd like to shout out to my familia, my wife, Essence Arce, to my son, Emiliano, and to my beautiful daughter, Maya.
I'd just like to shout out to Raza Studies teachers, students, wife, Elenia Aguilar, sons, Brock and Felix. And also like to give a shout out to the Lansing community for having a really, really humbling experience of just we get tired, we get taxed, but these kind of experiences and experiencing our experience here in Lansing, it really, really rejuvenates us and to keep on going strong. So it's greatly, greatly appreciated. Much love to this community.
This podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status not only of Chicanos and other indigenous peoples, but all oppressed peoples. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that RASA must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
Broadcasting from
behind
enemy lines.
Of the best.